Welcome to the My Family Coach podcast. I'm Claire, and each week you'll find me interviewing a guest expert to find out more about the tricky world of child behaviour, all in handy 15-minute-ish bite-sized chunks. At the end of each episode, we'll send you away with three practical tips. It's perfect for parents, carers, and professionals working with children. And if this episode leaves you wanting more, you can watch, listen, and read our wide range of free resources on the My Family Coach website. I'm joined today by Anthony Benedict. Anthony never particularly liked the UK system of education, but his mum said, if you don't agree with something, you need to get inside it and change it. And so to some extent, that's what he's been trying to do ever since. He started his professional career as an English teacher and worked his way up to becoming a mainstream head teacher. For the last 2 years, he's been the executive head teacher of a pupil referral unit in Tameside and has spent the last 18 months studying adverse childhood experiences, trauma and attachment. And today we're talking about what happens if my child gets into trouble at school. Enjoy the episode. Hi, Anthony. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm really well. It's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. And I'm really excited about the topic. It's something that I'm personally quite interested in and an area that I've worked in for a number of years. We're going to be talking about what happens if my child gets into trouble at school. And we're going to be thinking about some of the core language we have around exclusions and sort of challenges with school and talk about a whole host of things. But before we get into the kind of nitty gritty, it'd be really nice to find out a book you recommend on this topic.
OK, so the book that I recommend is called The Deepest Well by Dr. Nadine Burke. And that's a book about ACEs, which is adverse childhood experiences. And I think what it shows is how much is happening underneath that is underneath the surface that we don't really know about that supports both parents and children. I think schools often or parents often feel like the blame is put onto them. And I think this book goes into a lot of detail about myth busting and not talking about blame, but looking at what really is happening underneath for parents and for children. And maybe then at some solutions at how to move forward.
Yeah, I haven't read that book. I like to joke with the people that I'm interviewing that I've got a list of books now of about a million that I need to read. But particularly, I'm really interested in her. She's an excellent speaker as well. And I've seen a very famous TED talk that she delivers. And she's so passionate, isn't she, about the topics that she's talking about?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it comes from her heart. It's not full of science. It reads almost like a novel. And it just tells you very simply and very, very straight how things work and maybe how the brain works and maybe how certain things and why certain things are happening. And once you start to understand that a little bit, it's a bit easier to manage those situations and maybe help understand what's going on with your young person and help them improve and have a better chance.
Yeah, and I think we're talking about on this episode in particular around, you know, what does happen if my child gets into trouble at school, but it's always a good starting point to think about what might be going underneath and the reasons behind it, as well as some of the information that, you know, we're going to go through. But should we start off by thinking about that question? I mean, one thing we talked off air about was the kind of jargon and the difficult acronyms and difficult words if a child is going through the behaviour systems in school. Should we start off with that?
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So I think the key words probably that we need to talk about, and we did talk as well off air about some of these changing as well, so I'll try and talk about both of those. But we currently have a system where we have exclusion and permanent exclusion. And exclusion is in old money and possibly new money to be, is what used to be called suspension. So it's where something happens in school and the school deem that as a consequence for that behaviour, the student is not to attend school for a certain amount of days. And that's a suspension or, as I've said, an exclusion. If a student does something where the school believes that that student can no longer come to that school, that becomes a permanent exclusion. Or again, in old money, that used to be expulsion. We also have something called managed moves in the school system, and that is where sometimes a young person is struggling in school behaviourally, and the school feel that maybe them going to another school might be something that helps their behaviour and helps them make a different group of friends or helps their relationships. So a school can arrange a managed move, that has to be done in consultation with parents and with the student. It can't be forced. And normally then that student would attend another school for a trial period of time. And then if that period of time is successful, that becomes a permanent move. Another term is AP or alternative provision. And again, that is where a school can decide to direct a student to an off-site provision. And that's somewhere, often where class sizes are lower and the curriculum slightly different, often more vocational, but a school can direct a young person to attend an alternative provision. And that should be reviewed regularly, although there's no time limit to it, but it should be reviewed regularly. And the intention is always that that student should, if the behaviour improves, be able to come back to schools. I think the final term, and then I'm sure you want to discuss some of these, is a PRU, and I am the executive head of a PRU. So a PRU is a pupil referral unit. And that is where, when a young person is permanently excluded from school or expelled from school, then they'll attend a PRU. And again, they tend to be a smaller setting. There's a whole variety of how they operate. They tend to be authority maintained. Again, the intention is to try and support them in whatever's gone wrong and help them get back into schools. But obviously, that depends on each individual case.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is often down to the individual school, isn't it? And the policies that they might have in place that might be slightly different from another school and the parameters of exclusion. This is a big question. And I was thinking it in my head and I'm like, oh, Anthony, this is going to be a really big question. But what are some of the reasons why a child might get into trouble at school? And I call it professionally going through the behaviour system, which is a bit of a funny label, but I see it quite a lot when I go in and, you know, support individuals in schools or support families, where a child might be, you know, having detentions, having sanctions, consequences, however the school kind of labels them. But what might be some of the reasons that a child goes through those systems?
So I mean, the interesting and deeper thing, and we might come back to this and we might leave it here, is that, you know, there is a sort of phrase at the moment that all behaviour is communication. And often the behaviours that the young people are displaying are to do with some, it's like the tip of an iceberg. It's to do with what's actually happening underneath. So if a young person is struggling for some reason, their behaviours might reflect. And young people aren't like adults, and some adults can't do it, where we can sit down quite simply and say, look, I'm not feeling very happy about X, Y, and Z, so I'm cross, and therefore what young people tend to do is explode for a variety of reasons. But in school terms, the biggest real cause for exclusion and permanent exclusion is called persistent disruptive behaviour, which I think it's an interesting phrase because it's all encompassing. A school can use that to sort of meet any need that the school wants to. Although, you know, I think I'm doing head teachers a disservice that the idea of all schools is to try and keep young people in school. Yeah. But it does get to a point where schools have got big populations. And if a young person is either posing a threat or a danger to other people or themselves, sometimes schools have to consider that option. But schools will refer to that as persistent disruptive behaviour. And that can be anything from walking out of the classroom, being rude to teachers. It can't be about academic progress. It can only be about behaviour. Mm. But that at the moment is the biggest cause for permanent exclusion and exclusion across mainstream schools. The other sort of three areas that I think schools have quite a harsh approach to, or what I wanted to talk about a bit was zero tolerance. And then schools I think families and schools have struggled after COVID, and behaviour has become more prominent or prevalent. And I think that's from mental health and from young people being out of systems and out of routines. And lots of schools have responded to that with what they're calling zero tolerance approaches. It's not really for me to comment on whether that's the right thing or the wrong thing, but it is something that people are coming unstuck with because they're finding it very difficult. And the three areas there are drugs and weapons and violence, I would say. So if we start with drugs, schools often have a zero tolerance response to the use of or possession of drugs in school. Different schools have different ways of managing that. Usually it's around cannabis and not straw or alcohol, But some schools, if people have a small amount of cannabis or alcohol, some schools will permanently exclude for that. And that's just the way that it is, unfortunately. There are things at the moment, there are cannabis sweets that are doing the rounds. They're definitely doing the rounds up north. I don't know what the south's like.
And the vapes with cannabis in and,
But with the sweets, I know that a couple of schools have seen young people distributing them round the playground. Some schools will consider that dealing. And I think, you know, there is most schools, if a young person is selling drugs on site or sharing drugs on site, most schools will permanently exclude for that. Again, whether that's right or wrong is not for me to say, but, you know, I've had parents who are very shocked that that's happened and weren't necessarily aware that the young people even had these. And I think you can buy them sometimes quite easily, but schools are quite stern on their response to that. Also up north, we have got a lot of work on knife crime at the moment. And we are trying very hard to stop schools permanently excluding for weapons. But again, some schools, if a young person has a knife on their possession, some schools will respond with a permanent exclusion. Some schools will look more carefully at why that weapon's in school and what's been going on. But, you know, it is really serious. It is a massive problem nationally at the moment. We need to be very careful about what young people are carrying and why they're carrying that. And I think the final reason is violence, and that is either to another young person or to a member of staff. And that would usually be for a severe violent attack as opposed to a kind of minor fight.
Yeah, it's pretty eye-opening, isn't it? Hearing the kind of different reasons where those permanent exclusions might come from. But what's interesting for me as a practitioner, but also someone that supports parents, is that it's dependent on the setting, isn't it? It's dependent on the school. And I'm wondering, you know, if I was a parent carer and the parents carers listening now, let's say that their child, you know, gets that letter home from school and school contact parents carer saying, look, we're issuing a suspension, you know, a fixed term exclusion. What can a parent carer do when that happens? What's the next steps?
So I think the first thing is that what should be done is it should be very clear for the parent why that has happened and how long that is going to last for. And it would usually be up to 5 days. If it is up to 5 days, it's up to the school to provide work for that 5 days. And there should be very clear communication. I think as a parent myself, I think I would want to speak to somebody rather than just look at a letter. And you would expect that before the young person goes back to school to have a reintegration meeting with parent and child and teacher to try and restore what's gone on and work out what's happening there. From a parent's responsibility point of view, once that exclusion's gone out, you can't really stop it or overturn it. I think it's a matter of being open and honest with the young person and finding out what's gone on. And I think also there is a responsibility for parents to not have their young people out on the streets when they should be in school. It is the parents' responsibility to look after those people then, the young people then. If it really does seem unfair and unjust, you can challenge that. But again, it needs to be done in a professional and sensible way and try and avoid those emotional responses.
Because it could be really difficult, can't it? So as a parent carer, I'm getting that letter. And I feel that it's quite unjust, or maybe it's a zero tolerance policy that I don't necessarily agree with hugely as a parent carer. So that those emotions are going to run high. Any tips really on how to approach a school in that professional kind of manner that you've mentioned?
So I think the tip I'd give for everybody with something like this is sit down and write a letter or sit down and write an email. And then delete it, because I think your first response is emotional, and obviously you care very much about your young person. And the problem with that is that sometimes your judgment may be clouded as well. I think you have to be very careful, because schools do have behavioural policies, and it's well worth looking online and looking at what that school's behaviour policy is, because challenging it when a young person is being accused of doing something is probably the wrong time to challenge that policy and that decision. And I think you know, a parent has a choice of which school they send the young person to. And the schools have very clear policies. So familiarise yourself with that policy. Don't challenge it there and then, because you're probably cross and you're probably lacking a bit of rationality, rightly so. But I think if you really do want to understand, and schools are always willing to talk to people, but I think like with anything else, if you ring up shouting and screaming and upset and angry, then you're going to get a very different response to if you talk to somebody calmly and just raise what your points are very clearly, and also be prepared to listen to what somebody else's opinion is.
Yeah, it's being open, isn't it, to both sides? Because I suppose, you know, I know, you know, as a practitioner and someone that supports families, that often as a parent and carer, you hear the one side, which will be from your own child, your own you know, teenager, but obviously there is another side and there are other things going on, and it is, it's hard to say that, isn't it, but having an open mind to what's going on, but with all those emotions bubbling away, it can be a difficult thing to try. I'm also just thinking, we've talked about, you know, getting a letter about an exclusion of a temporary measure of suspension. What is the process any different if it's a permanent exclusion, Anthony?
Yeah, so with a permanent exclusion, again, you will get a letter explaining that your child... Well, there's two things that could happen, actually. You could get a letter saying your young person's been suspended for 5 days pending an investigation. And if it's pending an investigation, that does suggest that there could be something more serious, and that could then become a permanent exclusion. So just be careful if you get a letter that says pending. If the child is permanently excluded, then again, the school has to provide work for the first 5 days. After the first 5 days, there's something called 6-day provision, and that becomes an authority responsibility. Usually the authority will direct that person to the pupil referral unit in the area, but it could be an alternative provision, and it is the responsibility of the authority to provide that provision, and for the PRU then to be in touch with the parent about what's going to happen next. Again, with this, there is 15 days from when a permanent exclusion goes out to when there will be a governor's hearing panel. And this is a parent's opportunity to talk to the governors, potentially challenge whether it was the right decision or not. Now, you have to be very careful with this, because if the head teacher has decided it's a permanent exclusion, it is a head teacher's responsibility to have exhausted all other opportunities before they permanently exclude. So they don't do it lightly. And if it does get to that point, you do have to be careful about why and how you challenge it. However, you do have a right as a parent to say, I don't think this is fair, or the rules haven't been followed, or the system hasn't been followed. And that can be raised at a governor's panel. It's a governor's hearing. As I said, it has to happen within 15 days. So if it doesn't happen in that time, then the law stands on your side. And equally, if the paperwork's not being filled in and all those kind of things, then again, the law stands on your side. Schools have to follow a process. Mm. And again, if the governor's panel upholds the head teacher's decision and you're still not happy, you can raise that at an independent review panel. But I think sometimes parents are misguided as to what that means and what the power of an independent review panel is. So an independent review panel is people that aren't attached to the school. There'll normally be a local authority representative and some other people on that panel. But that panel cannot overrule the head teacher's decision.
Yeah.
They can direct the governors to reconsider, and they can suggest that the governors reconsider, but they can't reinstate a young person. I think parents are misguided about that sometimes. Finally, though, if policy hasn't been followed, parents can take it to a tribunal.
It's a lot, though. I'm listening, and I'm, you know, that's a lot of understanding of policy, certain procedures of governors' meetings, writing letters, doing lots of things. That doesn't sound like the easiest process to go through, perhaps.
No, it is a school's responsibility to support a parent through that process, though.
That's
so
great.
A school will give you that information, and they have to do that, and there's no reason for them not to do that. And equally, the local authority have to support you through that as well.
It's good. It is good that those, you know, those practices are there to help support through that process. And I'm wondering if, let's say, this imaginary parent and carer that we've sort of had in mind all through, let's say that the child, imaginary child we're thinking of, does go on to get permanent excluded and it's all been upheld. What happens then? So we've mentioned PRUs, pupil referral units, alternative provisions. What do they look like? How are they different from a mainstream setting?
I mean, there is no sort of one, like with schools, no one school acts in the same way, and no PRU and alternative provision acts in the same way. But the good thing about pupil referral units is that it is trained members of staff and there are smaller class sizes. The idea of all PRUs is to look at what's happened to try and support that young person and their family, and where possible to get the young people back into mainstream school. So it's not the end of the road. The disadvantages, and I have to be honest, I suppose, are that PRUs aren't able to offer the same suite of subjects. They've got lower amounts of pupils. So 8 GCSEs are unusual in a PRU. And I suppose there is the fear of what's known as the PRU to prison pipeline. So, you know, sometimes young people get stuck in the system. And when that is the case, we're doing a lot of work at the moment to try and stop this and prevent it. But a lot of young people, a lot of people in the prison service were in the PRU service.
Yeah, I'm writing a book on exclusions. We were talking about that before we started recording. And yeah, I've been reading evidence about the you know, school prison pipeline. It's very interesting. We don't have, you know, categoric proof that, you know, those exclusions cause criminality, but we certainly can, I think, quite easily say that it's a factor in it for, you know, absolutely for sure. And I think parents, carers listening, we don't want to scare with the idea of the prison, you know, pipeline that we've just talked about. Tell me, I know you're an exec head of a setting. Tell me a couple of real success stories maybe from your PRU.
I think, you know, we've had a number of letters from parents saying, you know, this is the first time anybody's listened to us and to our young person. And that they've really settled and that they are much happier in themselves and at home. I think in our PRU, we've got counsellors and we've got therapists and we've got staff that really understand the young people. So we've got skills and a set where we can support young people and give them things that maybe mainstream couldn't do for them. You know, we are a very small setting. You can have class sizes of about 5 young people. We've got links with farms and we've got links with animal care and we've got links with mechanics. So I think for some young people, you know, it really helps them and it gives them a chance to be heard and a chance to be noticed where often they go missing in big schools. So for some of them, you know, it really helps. And I think for some of the others, they've come to us, they've had a really bad time in a school. We've worked with them very carefully. We've listened to them and we've managed to find another school that maybe suits them better and suits their learning needs better. And, you know, everybody's different. And I think in a good PRU, we get to understand those young people. We get to hear them and we get to find a place in the world for them where they can be successful.
And I think those smaller class sizes and the nurture care that you're talking about, and I guess understanding was a key theme of what you mentioned there. It really will benefit some individual children that need that extra attention. So I think sometimes pupil referral units can have a bit of a bad name. I can't even bear to watch. There's a comedy series actually called PRU. I don't know if I can't.
I can't watch that. No.
I watched about 30 seconds of it. I was like, nah, because we're laughing, you know, as kind of school setting, and yeah, I wasn't into it, but yeah, I think, you know, there's lots, you know, recorded in the media and things about PRU, so it's really nice to hear the difference that, you know, those schools can make. I'm conscious of time. I've stuck to it. We're roughly about 20 minutes in. It'd be really nice just to finish off with 3 top tips for parents, carers, professionals listening.
I've got 4 actually, if that's all right. So
I'll allow it.
My first one is, it's really important to listen to what your young person is saying to you. And by that, I mean, don't listen to what you want to hear, but listen to what they're actually saying and what they're telling you, and try and be sympathetic or empathetic towards that. And my second one, and I found this more when I was in mainstream, is don't be too much of their mate. you are their parent, and they need those rules and they need those boundaries and they do need the love and the attention. But I often had parents who were too matey with the young people, and that meant that when there were rules in place, they found that really difficult. So don't be the mate. I think probably most important is don't be afraid to ask for help. I think, you know, often parents themselves have had negative experience of schools, and ultimately schools are there to help, and there is always somebody there to listen. And I think if you think there's something up, go and talk to somebody. And if it's not a school, a professional, a doctor, a friend, but ask for help. And the last one is never, ever, ever, ever give up.
Brilliant. And I think that, you know, those success stories that you've mentioned in Prue's is a testament to that, you know, not giving up. And even if someone is excluded, suspended, there's always a different path that takes someone on a different journey, and different isn't necessarily worse, in my humble opinion. That was so clear. That was absolutely brilliant and such useful information for parents, carers listening. So thank you so much, Anthony, for your time.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the My Family Coach podcast. Thank you for joining us as we lift the lid on the challenging world of child behaviour. Remember to subscribe to listen to all our episodes, and there's heaps more helpful support for all your parenting needs on the My Family Coach website. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.